Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast for the week of June 18th through 25th. This week we'll have a reading of Father Drew Christensen's Of Many Things column, as well as an interview with Father James McDermott, an associate editor here at the magazine. This is the Of Many Things column for June 18th through 25th. One of nature's ironies is that when it comes to wildflowers, the semi-arid west, even the desert southwest in springtime, outdoes the green-forested east. I'm told the secret is sunlight. The open forests and high meadows of the Sierra Nevada or Colorado's San Juan Mountains seem to sprout color from every crack in the earth. Though my brother Phil, an environmental engineer, tells me he has seen pastures in central New York carpeted with color, I cannot recall ever having found any scene in the east to compare with sights in the west. In California, gold is spread deep, even in hot open landscapes, by some 30 varieties of mustard. Legend has it that the early Franciscans, as they moved from mission to mission, seeded mustard along their trail to mark what later was known as the Camino Real. Now mustard is as ubiquitous as lavender in Provence. During a 30-day retreat in 1986, I tried to learn the names of just the varieties that inhabited Tilden Park, a regional preserve on the crest of the Berkeley Hills, but I failed miserably. It was in Yosemite that I first really began to learn my wildflowers from Don Gelpy, our Jesuit wilderness guide. His memory for wildflowers is prodigious. The one exception are whites. Perhaps he found them uninteresting, but his list seems to run out after daisies, white asters, and yarrow. I once asked him why. He said, "There are just too many to learn." For myself, I had special difficulty learning the violet-colored flowers. For that reason, I took great pleasure a few years ago in leading Don to a field of shooting stars, a deep purple flower whose downward-facing point is trailed, comet-like, by four or five skyward-trailing leaves. I had prayed a couple of days in solitude alongside a pond adjacent to the meadow. Don was looking for somewhere different to pray. When we arrived at the site, he was delighted. Never had he seen as many shooting stars in one place. He sat there the whole day long, as if in the Elysian fields, praying and journaling. Even though the brightest flowers often grow in hot, dry soil, wildflowers flourish best in moist land. One September, when several of us took a pre-semester backpacking trip, we were astonished by the gardens of flowers we found at the relatively low altitude of 7,000 to 8,000 feet. It had been a rainy El Nino year, and the snowpack lay on the ground until late summer. The sure sign of the recent melt were the snow plants, red, fat, asparagus-like spears, which make their appearance with the last remaining snow. In hotter seasons, I have been astonished upon finding an abundance of wildflowers wherever there are seeps and springs. At the end of one backpacking vacation, we put down camp at Red's Meadow, a campground on the eastern side of the Sierra. We were looking forward to soaking in the area's hot springs, but to our surprise, we discovered the usually dry eastern slope was a watershed, hosting dozens of varieties of wildflowers. Another summer, I was the guest of Dr. Sam and Mary Abu Ghazela at their cabin in the Black Hills. The place, well named Seven Springs, was home to an astonishing range of flowers. Most remarkable were the wild roses. I was used to seeing an odd plant or two here or there along a trail, but at Seven Springs, dozens and dozens were to be found. Why do wildflowers draw me so? Especially considering that my memory frequently fails me, and I return from a walk to consult the field guide, often to no avail. The color and variety, and sometimes the fragrance, fill the senses. Their combination of fragility and hardiness offer a lesson in existentialism, but they can also instruct us in the tranquil beauty at the heart of things. One July, I was camped with Dan Grudy at Triple Ute Pass in the San Juans, near the headwaters of the Rio Grande. The monsoons came 3 weeks early that year, and it seemed we did much of our retreat inside our tent. Because of the danger of thunderstorms, we learned to stick close to camp. One morning, I seated myself on a rock ledge just above a slope cascading with color. The choice of a text came naturally. Luke 12, verses 28 and 29, the lilies of the field. It turned out to be a memorable hour of prayer, blessed with an extraordinary sense of peace that brought many graces in the hard year to follow. The tranquility wildflowers embody continues to draw me, as it does others. Whether it is the simple peacefulness of the scene, the gentle existence of the flowers themselves, the quiet that comes in their study, or the holy peace for which they can be an occasion, they are balm for the soul. Drew Christensen, S.J. I'm here today with Father Jim McDermott, Associate Editor of America Magazine. We're going to talk a bit about his work here at the magazine. Good morning, Father McDermott.
Morning, Tim. How you doing?
Good. I'm doing well. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Maybe you can start by talking about how long you've been here at America.
I've been here about 2.5 years. I came in October of 2004.
Okay. And what did you do before you came to America?
Immediately before America, I worked in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Shout out to Milwaukee. All the cheeseheads out there. I worked in a parish called the Jesu, which is the parish that's located on the campus of Marquette University. I spent about a year there. It was my first year as a priest, so I was doing a lot of parish ministry, sacramental work, and then some work with adult formation.
Okay. And before that, what did you do?
Well, so I'm a Jesuit, so that means like I've done, they've given me like a zillion things. You say, join the Jesuits, see the world. So I did 2 years of study in St. Paul, Minnesota. That's where I entered the society. And that was sort of study about the society and about prayer. And then I was 3 years in Loyola, Chicago, studying philosophy and working with working in a housing project in Cabrini-Green, which is a housing project there in Chicago. And then I spent 3 years, kind of the biggest experiences, I had 3 years at Red Cloud Indian School in Pine Ridge, South Dakota. Mm-hmm. The Jesuits run two grade school, middle schools, and a high school in the southwestern part of South Dakota. It's the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation, which is, that's where Wounded Knee is. That's it's the Lakota, also known as the Sioux. Oh. So I taught English, I directed school plays, I drove a school bus. I did stuff with film, with like a film club with kids.
Okay.
It was great.
Now maybe you could tell us a little bit about your average day here in America.
Well, I get up around 10:30, 11. walk around in my pajamas. I have friends, because the way America's set up, the first three floors, it's a 9-story building. The first three floors are our offices, and then the other 6 floors are a Jesuit community of about 25 guys. And so I live here and work here, and my office is, it's not the same as my bedroom, but it's just across the hall. So my friends all think that I just, we all must work in our pajamas. hey, what's shorts and a t-shirt? Why do I need anything? No. So how does my day begin?
For the record, you're not in your pajamas right now.
But I'm not wearing any shoes. No. So a normal day. You know, the way that America works, the busiest days are Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. On those days, as you know, we're getting galleys, which are sort of finished manuscripts that are about to go to press. So we're editing those kind of again and again and again, getting that stuff ready. On a normal day, it's otherwise, it's not like what am I doing at different times, but I'm editing manuscripts. So that when somebody submits something, we accept it, and then it needs to be kind of just cleaned up a little bit for publication. I'm doing that. And I'm doing a lot of writing. I think some guys are more editor writers. They do, and they're great at getting like all the kinds of editing stuff, and the writers, they know all these different people, and I have some of that. But I spend a lot of time writing, or researching or making phone calls for articles and things like that.
Well, for example, you recently did a piece on Spring Hill College, which was a heavily reported piece about the history of that school and the desegregation of the school back in the 50s, was it?
Yeah, that's right, in 1954. Actually, Spring Hill College is a Jesuit school in Mobile, Alabama. It's the third oldest school of all the Jesuit schools. It's 176 years old. And they integrated in 1954 before Brown versus Board of Education, certainly before the Civil Rights Movement. And nobody really knew about that. I mean, it's kind of an unreported story. So the president down there is a guy from my province. He had talked to me about, he had talked to me at the 175th anniversary saying it'd be great if America could be interested in any of many stories about Spring Hill. And so, I went down there for a week. I was in their archives. I interviewed lots of different people. I worked with there's a great dissertation on the desegregation of Spring Hill by a guy named Charles Paget, which was also incredibly interesting and helpful. Yeah, and I came up with this 4,000-word sort of two-part article, which was just fabulous, just a really great experience.
And it was longer than 4,000 words to begin with.
Yeah, you know, I'm still learning. I've been here 3 years. You know, you think that you've been a place for like 6 months a year. You kind of get, you know how it works.
Mm-hmm.
I'm at 3 years almost, and now I'm beginning to understand how much work and research does a 2,000-word article look like, or 4,000-word. My piece actually, when it was done, was about 13,000 words. Yeah, and I didn't really know. I knew going in I was going to be too long, but my Lord, it's just, I had no idea it would end up being that.
Yeah, I have the same problem as a writer, reporter occasionally. You don't know when to stop reporting and start writing,
yeah.
And it takes some time to get used to that. Now, you also do some video work here at America. Maybe you can talk about that.
Yeah, actually, so video, both the writing and production, is a hobby, an avocation, kind of a vocation. What I've been able to do here, which has been just fabulous, is at Advent a couple years ago, and then at Holy Week last year, we had different members of the staff sit down and give like little 2 or 3 minute reflections that sort of go with the season, and they were great. It was what was really neat, you know, you sort of expect that the Jesuits can do this in their sleep because we were preaching about these things all the time. But then, you know, I thought some of the most interesting stuff was by people who never get a chance to, like, preach in public, you know? I just thought some people told stories from their lives. Some people just thought about the figure that we, you know, for the day or the season. It was just great. It was just a great project, and we're hoping to do more stuff like that.
Yes, yes. You've done some interviews also with Jesuits in the house here, and people come visit.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact, one of the great men of America House is a guy named Vinnie O'Keefe. Vinnie O'Keefe's 87 years old. And before, you know, about 20 years ago, before he was here, he was sort of the second in charge of the Society of Jesus in the world. He was Father Pedro Arrupe's, Father General Pedro Arrupe. He was one of his assistants, one of his four assistants, and then he was his vicar general, like the second in charge. He was actually in charge of the society for about, I think about 18 months when Pedro Arrupe had his stroke. And so I sat down with him for about a week talking about Pedro Arrupe, talking about certain moments in the life of Arrupe and in the society, and he was amazing. Amazing. Mm-hmm. Just great stories, and he's an extremely funny guy. So he can tell stories, and then he makes you laugh, and yeah, just so yeah. And in fact, I think we'll have probably a clip of his on the website sometime in the
next couple forward to that. And also, in addition to your work at America, you also do some work at a local parish here in Manhattan.
Maybe. I do, St. Joe's up in Harlem. Yeah,
okay.
I go there a couple times a month.
And you preach. You also run some retreats and such there? Or?
Mostly I say Mass. Actually, I did my first sort of Day of Recollection with them just last weekend, yeah,
mm-hmm.
which was great. Just a great experience.
I know most Jesuits here at the magazine do work outside, in addition to their work at the magazine.
Yeah, yeah. It seems like it, yeah. I would say absolutely, in fact. In fact, some, like Joe O'Hare, who's another associate editor, he's every weekend, I think, he's saying Mass. He's away for the weekend saying Mass at some place.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, Father Jim McDermott, thank you for your time, and we look forward to talking again.
Yeah, you too.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of the America Magazine podcast. Tune in next week when we'll be discussing the July 2nd through 9th issue of America. This is Tim Reedy for America Magazine.